Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, December 10th. Landgraf previews legislative session. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. Representative Brooks Landgraf met with members of the Midland Liberty Leadership Council Wednesday to discuss bills and other policies that might be considered during the upcoming session of the Texas Legislature. He told attendees during a luncheon at Gerardo's Casita that the session will include efforts to cut the state's budget because of lost sales tax revenue during the pandemic, as well as redistricting discussions. Landgraf said he expects Texas to add about three districts as a result of population growth recorded with the 2020 census. When redistricting talks occur, he said his goal will be to protect the Permian Basin and ensure it continues to have a strong voice in state decisions. In an interview, he said any seats Texas gains next year would go to the areas experiencing the most population growth, but it's unknown where that could be until the results of the census are released. Quote, I actually think that we're, that is the Permian Basin, are going to be okay. The population trends are going to allow us to keep everything intact, but we just want to make sure that we are able to continue to speak with a unified voice, he said. I guess the real goal is just to make sure that we don't get diluted here in the Permian Basin, and I'm not expecting that to happen, end quote. Landgraf has filed a few bills so far for consideration this legislature, including one that would require legislative approval for rules adopted during a state of disaster. Unlike executive orders made during hurricanes or wildfires that typically affect one location, the coronavirus pandemic is a statewide issue, Landgraf said. He said his bill would aim to prevent having a blanket statewide rule without any accountability. Quote, there's a distinction between this and a natural disaster, so I think that we need to have rules in place that reflect and appreciate those differences, he said. One aspect the bill may affect is limits on hospital visitations by requiring the legislature to approve statewide hospital visitation policies. He said the bill could also allow hospitals to make their own decisions regarding visitation. Additionally, Landgraf has proposed a bill that would create an active shooter alert system similar to Amber Alerts. He said it was inspired by talking to families of victims of the mass shooting in Midland and Odessa, particularly the family of 15-year-old Layla Hernandez. Quote, she literally died with her phone in her hands, and her family was around her with their phones in their hands, he said. If they had had some sort of alert that would have made them aware that danger was somewhere in the area, they could have taken some precautionary actions to help protect themselves, end quote. Landgraf is a member of the House Mass Violence Prevention Committee, which was formed following the shootings in El Paso and Midland, Odessa. He said his focus for legislation related to mass shootings will be on the alert system, but that other committee members will be filing different proposals. Landgraf met with about 20 members of Midland LLC, a young professionals group under the Texas Public Policy Foundation, for about an hour and a half Wednesday in a private room at Gerardo's. Only a couple of members wore masks inside the restaurant, although a sign was posted on the door instructing customers to wear masks. When asked about his participation in an event where many people were not wearing masks in an enclosed space, Landgraf said those who chose not to may have had health conditions that prevented them from doing so. Quote, I try not to cast judgment on anybody else, he said. The Texas legislature will meet every second Tuesday next year, beginning in January. City sales tax drops 33% in December. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The city's sales tax collection for the first quarter of the fiscal year is down by more than 19% compared to last year's record total, according to information from the City of Midland. The city reports losing about 19.2%, or $2.8 million, year over year, during the first quarter of the fiscal year, which started in October. The $12.1 million was still the third most collected during any first quarter in the city's history. The problem for the city, when looking at this economic indicator, might be the trends when it comes to the percentage drop in December. The city reported the $3.3 million collected this month was a 33.2% decrease. The trends now include declines of 20% plus during six of the last 7 months, double-digit percentage declines during nine of the last 11 months, and declines from each of the last 12 months. The city's December decline was pedestrian compared to Midland County's 49.3% drop, according to statistics from the Texas Comptroller's Office. The decline in the city of Odessa was 33.1%. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax income from 2 months before collection. December collection is based on October sales. New COVID testing site. Midland Health adds second testing site. Midland Health opened a second testing site Wednesday with financial assistance from the City of Midland. The site, located at MLK Center, 2300 Butternut Lane, will operate from 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. Someone who has been exposed or is symptomatic should call 68 Nurse to schedule an appointment to be tested at either the Midland Health West Campus or City of Midland MLK Center. These testing resources are available to anyone who has been exposed or symptomatic, regardless of their ability to pay. If available, insurance information will be collected, but no out-of-pocket fees will be required for anyone scheduled. Region's number of COVID patients creeps closer to 15%. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The number of hospitalized patients as a percentage of total hospital capacity in the region, that includes Midland, is closer to 15.0% than it has been in more than 3 weeks. The Department of State Hospital Services reported Wednesday a 15.1% in the region. According to Governor Abbott's executive order, regions that have had 7 consecutive days in which the number of COVID-19 hospitalized patients as a percentage of total hospital capacity exceeded 15% must follow restrictions to businesses, including bars and restaurants. The region that includes Midland and Odessa has been above 15.0% for 23 straight days, according to the DSHS. Should the percentage of COVID-19 hospitalized patients in Midland's trauma service area fall to 15.0 or less for 7 consecutive days, then certain businesses can reopen to 75% capacity. The Midland Health Department reported Wednesday that the total number of COVID-19 cases, confirmed and unconfirmed, inside Midland County during the pandemic reached 11,376. That total included 180 unconfirmed cases on Tuesday. The Midland Health Department also reported 178 confirmed cases on November 18th and 162 on December 1st. Those 2 days brought the total number of confirmed cases to 8,904. The Health Department also reported 2,504 active cases based on the confirmed cases inside Midland County, 5,902 recoveries, and 158 COVID-19-related deaths. The Midland Health Department is following new CDC guidelines, which recommends contacting patients who more recently tested positive, the city reported. Quote, the Midland Health Department will now contact recent positive patients along with contacting positive patients from November 19th as they continue to work through the influx of positive case numbers.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read a piece from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Thursday, December 10th. Warbird's Eye View. CAF's Christmas Flights Give Different Perspective of Midland by J.C. Lewis. Midlanders have the opportunity to take to the skies during the commemorative Air Force High Sky Wing's 7th Annual Christmas Lights Night Flights starting this Friday. The Spirit of West Texas will be taking flight with passengers through December 23rd. The flight lets residents see Midland from a different view while holiday decorations and lights are on display. For a World War II-era plane, the C-45 Spirit of West Texas takes off, flies, and lands smoothly. This plane is also part of the 12 Planes of Christmas fundraiser for the CAF. It's interesting to fly in an older plane instead of a modern-day commercial plane. There is no need to bundle up more than a jacket because the plane is heated and has nice seats. The plane can get a little loud at times, but it's fun to see the dashboard lit up red with all the controls. Downtown Midland is especially impressive at night with the tall city's iconic skyline lit up. Flights are scheduled every 30 minutes, beginning at 6 p.m. The last flight is at 9:30 p.m. Flights depart from the CAF High Sky Wing Hangar at Midland International Air and Spaceport. Tickets are $75 a person, 4 seats per flight, $145 for the co-pilot seat, and $395 for all 5 seats. Riders must be 5 years or older. All children under 12 must be accompanied by an adult. Passengers must be able to enter and exit the aircraft under their own mobility. To book a flight, email rides@highskywing.org or text 254-6182. Include phone number, requested dates, and time and number of seats needed. The Midland Army Airfield Museum will be open to tour during the flights, and there will be complimentary hot chocolate and cookies.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, December 10, 2020. Seliger Town Hall. State Senator Kel Seliger speaks at the grand opening of the University of Texas Permian Basin Engineering Building on October 22, 2019. Seliger has scheduled a virtual town hall meeting for 10 a.m. today. To participate, register at kelseliger.com. December 15 election. MISD and City of Odessa runoffs. Early voting times, today and Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Early voting location. Elections Office, County Annex Building, 2110 North A Street. Early voting numbers. In person, November 30 through December 4, 204. December 7, 40. December 8, 48, December 9, 47. Total in person, 339. Ballot by mail, 369. None received Wednesday. Note, there was a total of 522 votes during early voting and on Election Day during the city's special election earlier this year. 2020 Holiday Shipping Dates. Recommended send-by dates for expected delivery before December 25. USP Retail Ground Service, December 15, First Class Mail Service, December 18, Priority Mail Service, December 19, Priority Mail Express Service, December 23. Source, United States Postal Service. FCC to present Journey to Bethlehem. First Christian Church, 1301 West Louisiana Avenue, is presenting Journey to Bethlehem 6 to 7:30 p.m. Sunday. The drive-through event will offer the sights and sounds of that first Christmas, according to an email from the church. Then on Christmas Eve, the church will have a candlelight service beginning at 6 p.m. The service will be live-streamed on Facebook and YouTube. MFB reimagines the Nutcracker. Midland Festival Ballet is taking the 27th annual production of the Nutcracker to the big screen with a film produced by Film Hunter Media. The Nutcracker reimagined features 50 local dancers. There are 3 options to see the film. The Nutcracker Reimagined will be shown at the Big Sky Drive-In, 7:30 p.m. December 18. Tickets are $6 for 6 and older. Families can stream film at home. Tickets are $30 to see the film as many times as viewers would like between December 20 and December 31. Based in PBS will air The Nutcracker Reimagined at 8:30 p.m. December 23. Tickets are available at MidlandFestivalBallet.org. For more information, email Rachel Carr Ritter at rritter@MidlandFestivalBallet.org. John Burrito hosts WTFB Fundraiser. The West Texas Food Bank is partnering with John Burrito for the Give Yourself. The restaurant chain has pledged to donate 50 cents for each John Burrito Revolutionary Rewards card visit through December 17, which will provide two meals to a person in need, according to a press release from WTFB. During this time, each customer who presents their rewards card will be entered into a drawing for 1,000 reward points. John Burrito is operating through call-in orders picked up curbside and drive-through. This is the 11th year John Burrito and the West Texas Food Bank have partnered during the holidays. Last year's promotion raised $11,403 and provided 45,612 meals, according to the release. Parade organizers seek participants. Organizers of the drive-thru holiday parade are looking for businesses, organizations, or individuals to participate in the event planned for 6 to 9 p.m. December 19 at the Horseshoe parking lot. The Midland County Public Library and Midland County Sheriff's Office are hosting the event that will allow spectators to view stationary parade floats from their vehicles. Parade participants will remain with their float and not gather with others during the event, according to a press release from the county. Traffic will be restricted to one way only, with spectators entering the parking lot from Garfield Street and exiting onto the Interstate 20 service road. Those interested in decorating a float or vehicle for the parade should contact Hannah Johnson at hjohnson@mcounty.com or MCSO Sergeant Edie Subia at esubia@mcounty.com. Senior Life has fundraiser. Senior Life is seeking donated items for the warming tree. Gifts for Midland's homebound seniors. Gifts can include blankets, socks, slippers, gift cards, and hygiene products. Items may be dropped off at 3301 Sinclair Avenue by Friday. For more information, call 689-6693 or email Kathleen Kerwan-Haney, K-K-H-A-Y-N-I-E at seniorlifemidland.org or Tracy Renton, trenton@seniorlifemidland.org. Today in history. Today is Thursday, December 10, the 345th day of 2020. There are 21 days left in the year. On this date, in 1996, South African President Nelson Mandela signed the country's new constitution into law during a ceremony.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, December 10th. Mary Herrera Rodriguez went to be with our Lord and Savior on November 27th. She was born on August 14, 1941, to Odilon Herrera and Margarita Cerrante in Pomona, California. Mary's passion was spending time with her family and serving her Lord Jesus Christ. Mary went to Chino High School in Chino, California. She was married to Alfredo Cervantes in California. They had five daughters and one son. She lived in California and Arizona and then settled in Midland, Texas. Along with her six children, she also raised several grandchildren. Mary was married to Pilar Rodriguez on June 30, 1990, at Peace in the Valley in Fontana, California. Mary was survived by her husband, Pilar Rodriguez, one son, Alfredo Stephen Cervantes, five daughters, Kathy C. Salgado, Marlene Ann Martinez, Marie Dorothy Cervantes, Jane Elizabeth Cervantes, and Tricia Cervantes, and many, many grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. A memorial service officiated by David Carpahall will be held at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home at 405 North Terrell Street on December 10th at 6 p.m. Memorial service is under the direction of Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.heavenlygatefh.com. On December 4th, 2020, Emily June Williams McBrayer passed away in Midland. She was born on June 30, 1928, just outside of Carlsbad, New Mexico, on a family cotton farm in Otis, New Mexico. She was the youngest child born to Alvy Gordon Williams and Jesse Elizabeth White Williams. She is preceded in death by her husband, her parents, four brothers, Dale Williams, Bill Williams, Earl Williams, and Gerald Williams, three sisters, Viva Gardner, Helen Lohman, and Sybil Kirks. She is survived by her daughter, Darlene Olson, granddaughter, Courtney Bradley, grandson, Jason Heineman, great-grandchildren, also one sister-in-law, Bonnie Williams, and many nieces and nephews, all of whom she loved so much. There will be a private family burial and then a celebration of life service for friends and family at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel of Midland on Friday, December 11th at 3 p.m. Donations in June's memory may be made to the Arthritis Foundation of America, the Baptist Crisis Center, or to a charity of your choice. Arrangements under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Ben Johnson, age 89, of Midland, passed away Friday, December 4th. Family will be receiving friends for visitation on Thursday, December 10th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pitkin Funeral Home. A graveside service is set for Friday, December 11th, at 11 a.m. at Fairview Cemetery. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, masks are required at visitation and services. He is survived by his wife, Leola Johnson, two sons, Ben Ray Johnson Jr. and Donnie Johnson, two daughters, Donna Thompson and Cecil Lewis, one brother, one sister, nine grandchildren, 16 great-grandchildren, and by a host of nieces, nephews, cousins, and friends.
Hello. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, December 10th, 2020. Front page. Stop the spread. Wear a mask. Protect yourself and others against COVID-19. OCA student to graduate early. Will earn a high school diploma, associate degree from OC. By Ruth Campbell. RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. As a youngster, Caitlin Urquidy struggled with dyslexia, but that only made her more determined to make the most of her abilities. A student at Odessa Collegiate Academy Early College High School, 18-year-old Urquidy will graduate from Odessa College today with her high school diploma and an associate degree in general studies. Odessa College graduation for spring 2020 and fall 2020 will be live streamed on Facebook at facebook.com/Odessa College. Liberal arts and education graduation is at 6:30 p.m. today, business and industry at 6:30 p.m. Friday, and health sciences at 10 a.m. Saturday, a Twitter post said. Urquidy will start at University of Texas Permian Basin in January and plans to study business and go into accounting. She said she'll also go for a master's degree. She said Odessa Collegiate Academy, formerly known as Falcon Early College High School, appealed to her because of the smaller environment. I knew it was going to be different from the other high schools, and that's something that drove me more towards coming here, because I knew I would get more help, and it would be more of a hands-on learning experience, Urquidy said. Graduating early, she said, is an awesome experience, and it shows the students in lower grades that they can do it as well. She added that it is rigorous, but the challenge pushes you to reach your goals. Urquidy acknowledged that she has always been determined. I have to have multiple ways to figure something out, and that's what drives me to keep on going, she said. Knowing that she's graduating is surreal because of the pandemic. It's just not a normal senior year, and tomorrow I have my cap and gown ready, but it feels weird because most seniors, they're here at school every day, but it took a big toll on us, Urquidy said. None of us expected this. K Coming in as freshmen, she and her classmates couldn't wait to be seniors. Well, that kind of changed this year. It's nerve-wracking, but I'm excited, she said. Her experience at OCA is something Urquidy said she will always carry with her. I have created relationships with teachers, students, and I know that the relationships I have created, I wouldn't have been able to do that at the other high schools. They've given so many opportunities here, and that's something I'll always be grateful for, Urquidy said. In coming to OCA, she said she was always set on concentrating on academics in high school. I feel like I'm going to be different going into the college level, just a full university, compared to other students that are graduating regular seniors going into university. Because the first day you walk into a college room here at OC, the professors tell you that just because you're a high school student doesn't mean you're going to be treated like one, she said. You're taking a college class, so your expectations are just as high. I feel like being here gets you prepared for later on because you see a lot of university students and they just don't understand what's going on. Her first day at OCA, Urquidy said she was about to walk away. But looking back at it, I'm glad I didn't because, first of all, it's what you're saving yourself so much time and money and you're killing, basically killing two birds with one stone. It's the way I see it, she said. Many people ask her if she would do it again, even with the long nights of studying and homework. But that's what comes with the challenge and all of it. It's an experience I wouldn't change, she said. Her family will have a dinner for her after the ceremony. She said her parents are proud of her in part because she didn't let her dyslexia stop her. Graduating tomorrow is just my way of giving back to my parents for everything that they've done and for never giving up on me, Urquidy said. Urquidy has one older sister who has served as an inspiration to her. I feel like I'm doing this to be an example for my two younger nieces as well, though, she said. OCA principal James Ramage said it's rare to have someone finish early. I had two students last year that finished a semester early, and I had one student finish a year early last year. Each year you might have one or two, but it's just the devotion they have to do both degrees at the same time. You have to be highly motivated. You have to have really strong organizational skills and be goal-oriented. She's definitely all that to stay on top of things. She'll do great at UTPB, I have no doubt. She's just a very determined young lady, very mature for her age, Ramage said. City legal bill tops $87,000 in FOI fight. Austin lawyers retained to fight OA lawsuit released. OA News at OAOA.com. The legal bills borne by Odessa taxpayers keep piling up as the city continues to fight the Odessa Americans' efforts to force it to comply with state freedom of information laws. Freedom of information requests filed by the newspaper show another $24,647.48 has been billed to the city by the Austin law firm hired to contest the Odessa Americans lawsuit, accusing the municipality of violating the Texas Public Information Act. To date, the legal battle has cost the city and taxpayers $87,490.99. The OA has requested the November bill. The latest bill for October comes as word surfaced that the city apparently is no longer using the Austin firm Cobb and Council. Instead, the city will apparently rely on lawyers from the city attorney's office as the case winds its way to a state appellate court based in Eastland. City of Odessa attorney Natasha Brooks filed a formal motion for substitution of city attorney for the Cobb and Council firm. It is unfortunate taxpayers must continue to foot the legal bill for a city that continues to make it difficult for the news media and those very same taxpayers to have unfettered access to police reports and records that by law have always been available to the public, Away publisher Patrick Canty said. And this at a time when so many residents struggling on limited personal budgets face tax increases. It's simply adding insult to injury. The newspaper sued the city in January, alleging the entity was violating the Texas Public Information Act, TPIA, by failing to release in a timely manner police reports and probable cause affidavits. Oftentimes, the paper was forced to file a Freedom of Information request for routine public reports. The FOI requests and reports, frequently peppered with redactions by the city, were usually referred to the State Attorney General's office for review, a move that only added to the delay in basic crime information getting to the public. The city began this practice after the 2019 Labor Day weekend mass shooting in Odessa, and some city representatives later explained they were upset that local news organizations had access to the names of the shooting victims so soon after the tragedy. In October, a visiting state district judge denied the city of Odessa's request to dismiss the newspaper's lawsuit. It took only a few days for Midland Judge Rodney Satterwhite to review arguments and rule that the OA's lawsuit should be allowed to proceed. The city has appealed that ruling. Canty vowed that the newspaper will not back down from its fight until the city is made to follow the law. We will never tire of fighting to uphold laws in place to ensure the free flow of public information to the citizenry and to the news media, he said. It's a cornerstone of a free and civil society. No date has been set yet for the hearing before the appeals court, but Canty said he is sure the legal bills for the city will only continue to mount. Matreya Tomlinson, a board-certified civil appellate attorney in Austin, previously told the OA an appeal could take a minimum 6 months before a decision was rendered and that it could cost Odessa taxpayers an additional $30,000. That's in a perfect world, Tomlinson said about the appeal process. Most practitioners ask for extensions, and chances are, especially in the pandemic, they will get them. Attorneys for the city argued during the hearing before Judge Satterwhite that the city implemented this new procedure to ensure sensitive or inappropriate information was not being released. They added that the newspaper was upset because they liked the old arrangement in which the reports and their content, some of it described by them as salacious, were so easily obtained. But the newspaper has never sought to obtain or publish information that would be inappropriate, such as the names of sexual assault victims or juveniles, and Canty noted that they are bound by ethics and never would. Essentially, they wanted to fix a system that was never broken, and it is a system grounded in law that has always been practiced and adhered to by governmental entities, the public, and news organizations throughout the state, Canty said. And we feel strongly that they are legally bound to provide information in police reports and other public documents that the citizenry is entitled to see. Instead of trying to manage and control the free flow of public information, they ought to focus on following the law. Representing the OA is John Bushin, a national authority on First Amendment law, Midland attorney Randall Rouse, and Houston attorney Jeff Nobles. Other legal bills. A Freedom of Information request also details that the city of Odessa has spent more than $14,000 in attorney fees to a Houston law firm hired to help the city in their quest to take some sales tax money from Ector County. 314 days. For 314 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through December 4th, the city has spent $87,490.99 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. Quick hits. Empty stocking needs help. With only 8 days to go in the 26th year of the Empty Stocking Fund, our goal of $100,000 won't be met without your help. Funds stay in Ector County to help needy families during the annual fundraising effort by the Odessa American and the Salvation Army. Funds go for a good holiday meal and small gifts under the tree. Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund can help families like that of Joseph, not his real name, a struggling dad who had his leg amputated and was the sole financial provider for the family. Donations may be mailed or delivered to the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, or the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Suite 800. Zip codes for both are 79761. Call the Salvation Army at 332-0738. The Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than $2 million. Donate online at tinyurl.com/VH5FJDZ. On the net, tinyurl.com/VH5FJDZ. Early voting. Early voting for the runoff election is scheduled from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. today and Friday. Locations for early voting include the Ector County Courthouse Annex, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, Salinas Community Building, and First Church of the Nazarene Gymnasium. Westlake Hardware is not a location. In Midland, early voting will be at Midland County Annex Elections Office, 2110 North A Street, Midland. Election day locations will include the Globe Theater at Odessa College, Salinas Community Building, and First Church of the Nazarene Gymnasium. In Midland, Odessa Country Club, No. 1 Fairway, Midland County Annex Courtroom, 2110 North A Street, Midland, MLK Junior Community Center, 5600 Butternut, Midland, and Midland Chin Church, 2800 West Louisiana Avenue, Midland. Voting hours will be 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Free flu shots and COVID testing. The City of Odessa, in partnership with Medical Center Health System and Odessa Regional Medical Center, are offering free COVID-19 testing and free flu shots to City of Odessa and Ector County residents. Free mobile COVID testing has been scheduled starting at 10 a.m. at the following dates and locations. Lining up starts at 8:30 a.m. Friday, Ector County Coliseum. Monday, UTPB Park. Tuesday, JC Playgrounds. December 18th, Far West Events Center. December 21st, Central Park. December 22nd, Buddy West Elementary. December 28th, Sherwood Park. December 30th, UTPB Park. Only 200 tests will be available at each event for City of Odessa and Ector County residents. It's first come, first serve. Residents must show proof of residency and provide good contact information, phone number, and email in order to get results. Children as young as 3 years old are eligible for testing. Along with the free mobile COVID-19 testing events, participating MCH and ORMC community clinics will be offering daily free COVID-19 testing and flu shots. For more information, including a list of participating locations and hours, visit https://tx-odessa.civicpluscom/341/COVID-19-testing. Free COVID-19 testing. The City of Odessa is now partnering up with the state of Texas to expand its free COVID-19 testing by providing daily drive-through testing from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday, starting December 11th at Floyd Gwynn Park, 1015 North County Road West. Testing is open to anyone over the age of 5, not limited to city or county residents. The tests are free to everyone, but those who have insurance are asked to please present their insurance card. The City of Odessa will be administering saliva sample tests at this site. Results will be available within 48 hours. Testing is provided by Texas Department of Emergency Management and the City of Odessa Incident Command. To pre-register for tests, visit www.doxhealthtesting.com or call 267-362-5207. That's 267-362-5207. For more information about COVID-19 testing, visit tinyurl.com/y56sclc. Christmas show. Bronco Legacy has scheduled Jingle All the Way at 7:30 p.m. December 11th and 12th at the Odessa High School Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $10 for adults and $5 for students and children. Tickets are available at the door. To purchase tickets in advance, call 456-6474. Visit www.facebook.com/Odessa High School Choirs. Tuna Christmas, Midland Community Theater, 2000 West Wadley Avenue, Midland, has scheduled a holiday comedy, Tuna Christmas, at 2:30 p.m. December 13th. Doors open at 2 p.m. Tickets are available at mctmidland.org or call 570-4111. Enrollment now going on. Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center is now enrolling students for Odessa Spring 2021 classes. In-person classes will be offered Tuesdays at 4:30 p.m. for digital literacy students and at 6:30 p.m. for English language learning students beginning January 12th. English language students are also invited to join the online classes. Submit your application online at tinyurl.com/T7T4BUX or call 432-682-9693 to make an appointment. Five of a Kind Baby Shower. Photos by Eli Hartman, Odessa American. Top. Heather Rodriguez speaks during an interview as her quintuplets rest behind her during a baby shower celebration at Dr. Lila Pilarcetti, MD's office on Wednesday morning. Above left, the Rodriguez family, who delivered quintuplets at ORMC on August 13th, held a baby shower at their OBGYN doctor's office on Wednesday morning to celebrate the release of their last quintuplet from the hospital on December 2nd. Above right, Dr. Lila Pilarcetti, MD, crouches down to say hello to the Rodriguez quintuplets during a baby shower at his OBGYN clinic on Wednesday morning. Scenic Mountain welcomes new general surgeon. OA Life at OAOA.com. Big Spring. Scenic Mountain Medical Center recently welcomed General Surgeon Dr. Steve Cox, MD, to the Stewart family. Cox brings more than 35 years of surgical experience and strong patient rapport to the Big Spring community. My practice philosophy has always been to provide patients in need of surgery with the best care to achieve excellent outcomes and return them to their optimal health, Cox said. I look forward to helping residents of Howard County through all their surgical needs and serving as a resource for them and their loved ones. Cox has special surgical training and experience for a variety of conditions, including breast disease, thyroid or parathyroid, and skin cancers. His patients will also have access to minimally invasive techniques for general abdominal disorders, including gallbladder, appendix, groin hernia, and upper and lower endoscopy. COTS will expand access to surgical services in Big Spring and the surrounding areas so our residents can stay local for their general surgery needs, Stacy Brown, president of Scenic Mountain Medical Center, said. We are very excited to have him join our Scenic Mountain Medical Center team. COTS is board certified by the American Board of Surgery and completed his residency in general surgery at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center in El Paso. He earned his medical degree at Texas Tech Health Sciences Center in Lubbock. COTS is accepting patients at 1501 West 11th Place, Suite 100 in Big Spring. Appointments may be scheduled by calling 432-263-6018. Empty Stocking. Want to help? Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund may be mailed or delivered to the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Suite 800, Odessa, or the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, 79761. Donate online at tinyurl.com/VH5FJDZ. Want to know more? Call 332-0738. What is it? Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than $2 million. Empty Stocking Funds enable the Salvation Army to provide toys and food baskets to needy families in Odessa. This year's goal is $100,000. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, December 10th, 2020, page A3, local. Man charged with choking, assaulting ex-girlfriend. OANews at OAOA.com. A 35-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly choked and assaulted his ex-girlfriend. Paul Slaughter was charged with assault by strangulation, family violence, a third-degree felony. Odessa Police Department officers were dispatched at 8:51 a.m. Tuesday to the unit block of Dolores Drive, an OPD affidavit detailed. The complainant, identified as Emily Kelso, reportedly told officers that her ex-boyfriend assaulted her over the past 2 days. Officers saw multiple bruises on the arms and shoulder of Kelso, the affidavit stated. Officers also saw Kelso's lips were busted and had dried blood on them. Kelso also reportedly had bruising under her chin and 2 scratches on the right side of her neck that were consistent with being choked. Kelso also stated that while being choked, she couldn't breathe. Slaughter was placed in handcuffs and read his Miranda warning, which he invoked and refused to answer questions, the affidavit stated. Officers saw scratches to both sides of Slaughter's face, which Kelso stated were defensive scratches to stop him from choking her. Slaughter was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. No bond for Slaughter had been set as of Wednesday morning. MCH reports 3 more COVID-19-related deaths. OANews at OAOA.com. Medical Center Health System reported its 151st, 152nd, and 153rd COVID-19-related deaths on Wednesday. The first patient, a 71-year-old male, died Tuesday afternoon. The second patient, a 52-year-old male, died late Tuesday night. The third patient, an 84-year-old male, died Wednesday morning. The first patient was a resident of Hector County and was admitted to Medical Center Hospital on November 15th. The second patient was a resident of Hector County and was admitted on December 8th. The third patient was a resident of Hector County and was admitted on November 27th. All patients had pre-existing conditions and all families have been notified. ECISD rolling out rapid tests by Ruth Campbell, or campbell@oaoa.com. Hector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray listens to nurses giving him instructions about how to self-administer the VINAX-NOW rapid COVID-19 test. Courtesy photo. Armed with more than 11,000 rapid tests, Hector County ISD is rolling out its Binax Now testing project to help diagnose staff and students exhibiting symptoms of COVID-19. Assistant Superintendent of Student and School Support Alicia Siverson said Phase 1 started December 8th and runs through December 18th. It will only include staff who are showing symptoms while at school. Part of the reason this is so important is when someone becomes symptomatic, we have to assume they have COVID. We send them to see their primary health physician. They have to follow the return to school or return to work protocol, which includes the quarantine. So this gives us the ability to identify and isolate people who are testing positive when they begin to show symptoms at school, Siverson said. We can actually identify a positive quickly before they ever leave our campus. We can quickly act on contact tracing because we still have that person in our building, so we can ask the questions to identify and quarantine possible exposures. Because of PCR, it takes a while to get the results back. This actually reduces the days absent for a staff member because they're not sitting waiting for a PCR test to come back to return. Of course, the tests are free, so that helps with that financial burden, she added. Starting January 4th, when the district returns from Christmas break, Phase 2 will start. Phase 2 is going to include all of the staff that were included in Phase 1, but then we will be providing the option to high school and middle school students who begin exhibiting symptoms while at school. That's going to run January 4th through the 15th. Phase 3 is going to start January 18th, and then we'll just continue as long as needed. That's where we'll bring in our elementary students and offer this testing for elementary students who begin to exhibit symptoms while they're at school, Siverson said. She added that parental permission is required for any child under 18, so it is optional. The district received 11,160 rapid test kits, and they're about the size of a credit card, she said. As soon as 50% of the tests are used, they will receive enough for the next month. It's a monthly shipment, assuming you use 50% of your tests that month. Thinking of peak times, like 2 weeks after Christmas, we know what happens on the 14th day after any opportunity to get together with people. So we may not use a whole lot of our tests right now, but we may have a surge after Christmas break. If we're not down to half of our test kits used, we won't receive that next shipment, but the next shipment is set to come when we get to 50%. That will happen, I'm assuming, until tests aren't available, Siverson said. The Texas Division of Emergency Management has coordinated with the Texas Education Agency to provide the tests. To get the tests, you can pre-register, and that sends you a QR code. When you're tested, you scan the QR code that is on your actual test. There's a tracking system built into the pre-registration and the data entry that our nurses do, Siverson said. All ECISD nurses have undergone required online training to administer the test. They create a login so they are registered as a trained test administrator. Becky Rhodes, ECISD Director of Nursing and Health Services, said the tests are very easy to use and even non-medical people who have completed the training can become test administrators. Having testing available in our schools is part of a national testing strategy to identify positive cases quickly. Early identification of those who are positive and having them isolate can slow the spread of COVID-19 and help identify those who might need medical care sooner. The tests are free, so this will help save our families money. Being able to test in our schools is good for both our community and our schools, Rhodes said in an email. Cyberson added that the other benefit was that they're not the brain tickler type. The Q-tip, or the swab, it's actually just placed in the front shallow part of your nostril. It's such an easy test to administer that actually you can self-administer it with the supervision of a trained test administrator. Adults and high school students will have the opportunity to self-administer, she said. The nurses will ask if they would like to test themselves or have it conducted by a nurse. A practice day was held December 4th. Cyberson said some staff members said they would let someone else do the test, but others did their own, including Superintendent Scott Murray. It's really simple, Cyberson said. It's non-invasive, and it can be self-administered with the supervision of one of our test administrators. It takes up to 15 minutes to get the results back, and it has a high accuracy rate. Another reason this is helpful is if you come to the nurse's office and you're symptomatic, you're not feeling well, we can test you, wait 15 minutes, and you'll know if you're positive or negative. If you're positive, you're still with me, so now I can start asking those contact tracing questions about exposure. That's going to be a huge time saver, Cyberson said. With all the precautions the district has taken, Cyberson said they aren't seeing positive cases arise from the schools. Most of the cases come from going to family gatherings, funerals, weddings, or birthday parties. When the practice test was conducted December 4th, they had 25 people volunteer to be tested, and none of them were positive. When we have a student who is symptomatic, we send them home out of an abundance of caution. We assume they have COVID unless they go to the doctor and get an alternative diagnosis, like strep throat or flu or something. But we have to assume they have COVID because they're exhibiting the symptoms of COVID. So the important thing to note about this test is this is not a test to be used as a return-to-school protocol or a return-to-work protocol, Cyberson said. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recently changed the quarantine period from 14 days to 10 days if you've been exposed. If you want to return prior to that 10-day period, you can get a PCR on or after day 5. If it's negative, you can come back to work or school, Cyberson said. If a student or staff member gets sick at home, at night, or on the weekend, they need to see a physician or go to a facility that will provide testing, she said. There is return to work and school criteria on the district website. ECISD Nursing, TINYURL.com/Y2BSZPKG.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.